This is CliffCentral.com.
It is Monday afternoon. The time is 2 minutes past three. My name is Rosie Muthene, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And welcome to my show titled Pan-African Connect, where we connect with all beautiful people from across the continent, whether we're talking about food, decor, travel, interesting habits, activism, anything that you can think of that is purely African, we are going to discuss it. Before we get into our subject for this week, where we go to Uganda and speak to Chef Michael Bagana, if you want to send a message via Twitter, my handle is PrincessRTM. And of course, we're also at CliffCentral.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Rosie Muthene. Or alternatively, you could call us on 0861-555-189. But before we get into our interview, we got to listen to this.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is 6 minutes past three South African time. My name is Rosie Muthene, a.k.a. the Afro-Yiddish Princess. And welcome to my show, Pan-African Connect, where we connect to beautiful people from across the continent, whether we're talking about food, decor, travel, activism, sport, anything that's interesting that has to do with our beautiful continent. We are going to discuss it. And this week, we are going back to Uganda. We are going to be speaking to Chef Extraordinaire, Mr. Michael Bagina. Chef Michael, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Michael, you're based in Kampala, Uganda. Where did you grow up, before we get into your career and for your love and passion for food?
Well, I was born in Nairobi, mm-hmm. Kenya,
mm-hmm.
And I lived there for a decade.
Yeah.
Before moving back to Kampala.
Yeah.
My being born in Nairobi was purely circumstantial because of the political situation in Uganda at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, together with my family, we moved back in 1987. And I have lived more or less in Kampala since then.
Yeah, I read on one of your blogs when you spoke about moving back and the changes that you had to adjust to, and I mean you mentioned it now because of the political situation in Uganda. How different and how difficult was it for you when you had to move back and at such a young age?
Well, I mean, to begin with, I didn't have friends.
Mm.
And I've grown up accustomed to certain things, like, you know, the lights being on every day, and you'd never see soldiers roaming the streets of Nairobi at the time. But yeah. In Kampala, it was different because there were soldiers everywhere and guns everywhere.
Yeah.
And you know, the roads were not good, and it was just generally, literally, a dark time.
Yeah. And over the years, I've been to Uganda a number of times, and the picture that you see and what you experience in Uganda is totally different now. How many years did it take that, if you can remember, of when the changes actually started to happen?
Well, ideally, I would say, and this is specifically because of my generation,
mm-hmm.
that was sort of the focal point of these changes. And there was a rapid change. There was rapid development of Kampala,
yeah.
In particular, and Uganda in general.
Yeah.
And I would say the last 20 years have seen a rapid change in culture, in infrastructure. It's just been a lot of change. And yeah. Having been there at the time to witness this change, I think it makes us, me and my generation, we do feel like we've seen the rebirth of the country and we've seen it grow over the last 20 years.
Yeah. But growing up, what were your aspirations and dreams as a child?
Well, Funny enough, I did want to join the army at one point.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's something that every little boy wants to at some point. If it's not that, it's to be to drive a train. So that's okay.
It is true, but yeah, I know it is true. A lot of young boys want to join the armed forces, and I did have this conversation with my dad, and but my mother was having none of it. Now, for me, being a chef was not a fallback position. I've always loved food.
Yeah.
And it was more about being curious. Why, how is this made? How is this done? How are kitchens managed? And, I figured I can do this.
Yeah.
And make a decent living out of it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a passion. I didn't go to culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
So when you didn't go to culinary school,
when you went to Makerere University, what did you study?
I was doing urban planning.
Oh, wow. That's totally different.
It is totally different. I was doing urban planning because, my dad had hopes that I would join his real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
Hopes that, never came to life. I was always interested in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I made my way through different places in the States and here in Uganda, and I learned on the job.
Yeah. After you graduated, what was your first job, or did you start working while you were studying?
Well, what happened was I decided that I was going to get into catering.
Yeah.
And I figured the best way to do it was to just take that in your step.
Right.
And so I started a little company, and I used to do a little few gigs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have much experience then. And not only for the cooking bit, which for me I think came to me naturally.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the experience in terms of how to manage a business, specifically a catering business.
Yeah.
And I figured I needed to learn a few things. And I eventually made my way to the USA, where I learned from quite a handful of experts.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back to Uganda and immediately was employed by one of the largest hotel chains here, called the Imperial Group.
Yeah.
I was there for a while, and I steadily rose to the position of sous chef.
Yeah, but before we get into that, and, so you were studying in the US. Which part of the US were you at? Were you in?
Oh, okay. I was in Rhode Island. I was in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
I was in New York.
Yeah.
And Maryland.
And what were the major challenges that you underwent when moving? I mean, we're talking about a time where, I suppose, Africa was, I don't want to say undiscovered to the Americans, but it wasn't the norm for a lot of African students moving in. I mean, what were your challenges?
Well, to begin with, Africa is still largely unknown.
Yeah.
As far as cuisine is concerned.
Yeah.
You will find that we who practice in this industry, everything we do, or almost everything we do, is geared towards what is done in the West.
Yeah.
So for me, the challenge was, a lot of people were like, interesting. So, young African lad who's come to pick up a trade, and what do you want to do with it? And my answer was, I want to take it back home.
Yeah.
And help the industry grow.
Mm.
I was fortunate in that the people that I met there were very helpful. They couldn't do much about what it is we do in Africa because they had not the slightest idea. And incidentally, none of them had actually ever been to Africa. So they knew nothing about, African cuisine or African culture.
Mm.
So it wasn't too hard. I'll be honest. It wasn't too hard.
Mm.
But it was good exposure for me as well.
Yeah. Okay, so you came back to Uganda and you started working at the Imperial Royal Hotel. How long did it take you before you became one of the sous chefs?
2 months.
Oh, wow. You're a fast learner, aren't you?
Yes. 2 months. I mean, I put in the hours, and I used to do 14 to 16 hour shift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, because of the zeal and the self-motivation,
yeah.
I think my boss has realized that, you know, this is somebody who could be useful to the establishment.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I was a sous chef. I did learn a lot there. Mm-hmm. It's a conferencing hotel, so most of our meals are based on mass production.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very steep learning curve, but I appreciate it very much, and I appreciate people that I worked with,
yeah.
Or worked for that matter. They really encouraged me.
Yeah, and then after, I mean, how long were you within the Imperial Group for?
I was with the Imperial Group for about 2 years.
Okay. And yeah. what was your next journey? What was your next employer?
Well, I moved to Nairobi,
mm-hmm.
and I was working with an establishment called Vola, which was an Italian restaurant.
Right.
How I got into that was purely coincidental. One of these people was in Uganda, and one time they had a meal at Imperial, and they were quite impressed. And so, you know, we exchanged numbers, so on and so forth, thinking,
yeah.
Okay, you know, whatever. I'll probably never hear from these people. But, you know, the call came through, and I left. So now for me, that was a bigger challenge, because if you look at the hotel industry in Uganda, most of the qualified or experienced chefs do come from Kenya.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are a priority as far as if you're going to give them jobs here, they'll always employ Kenyans first. But, you know, they've got the experience and they've got the work ethic.
Yeah.
So for me there, as a Ugandan, a lot of people were surprised that there's actually a chef from Uganda practicing in Nairobi.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't want to say I was the only one, because I'm not aware of any others probably are there in existence. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of people were surprised, and a lot of people used to come to the restaurant simply based on that fact.
Oh, wow.
Of course, most of these were Ugandans.
Mm.
Most of these were people known to myself. But yeah, it was good. And my time in Nairobi was also an invaluable experience as far as my career is concerned.
You said Vola was more of Italian cuisine. What type of, I mean, your mainstream dishes that you were preparing at Imperial, what were they?
Well, Imperial, like I said, because it was a conferencing hotel, so we used to do a lot of buffets.
Right.
Which were, they were an eclectic mix of the Ugandan cuisine and Indian.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have, continental European dishes as well.
Right.
So that was like a melting pot of cuisine at the Imperial. Working at an Italian restaurant was something new for me. Mm. But like I said, I pick up things very quickly, and it was easy for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I've worked, not as a chef, but I've worked as a waitress back in the day when I was studying, and there was always exciting and a lot of challenging incidences that used to happen in the kitchen. And I mean, we don't have to mm-hmm. talk about the really bad ones, but what are some of the most memorable, whether it's good or bad, the choice is yours, but what are some of the most memorable experiences that you've had whilst working in some of these kitchens?
Well, there's quite a number.
Mm.
And I guess the ones that will come, of course, to mind very quickly are when I was still working with the Imperial, which had a large workforce.
Mm.
So you had all sorts of characters in this kitchen, and there were a couple of comical moments. And of course, like you mentioned, there were moments that were not exactly the best, because these are high pressure and very tense workplaces.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people are on the edge and nerves afraid. But the one thing that I enjoyed the most was the camaraderie, you know, the way we'd get together, your line chef, your sous chef, your chef de partie. At some point, it didn't really matter what your position was.
Yeah.
And we always had something to talk about, and especially towards the end of the month when everybody was expecting to get paid. You know, we would always have common goals.
I think that's a universal conversation, you know. Anybody waiting for the paycheck.
You know, but the one thing I think most people who work in the hotel industry will tell you, the kitchen staff run the show.
Yeah.
Especially in big hotels like this, because, you know, sometimes we'd be like, okay, if we're not getting paid soon, we're going to put down our names and walk out. And, you know, even the hotel empty would come and, no, we're arranging everything, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, sooner rather than later, we'd get paid. So it was that kind of thing. And then, you know, of course, we still hung out after work.
Yeah.
And not talk about food for a difference.
But now, as chefs going to other establishments, are you as critical about other people's food, or do you not just eat out? I've always wondered that about chefs.
Well, it depends. I do eat out, but I'll eat out at specific places that I know for sure do quality food.
Yeah.
Otherwise, 80% of the I do eat at home.
Mm-hmm.
My house help doesn't cook. She's afraid.
I would also be afraid knowing who my boss is.
Yeah.
When did you move back to Uganda? How long were you in Nairobi for? Hello? Okay, the line's bad. We're just going to take a music break, and then we'll call Michael right back.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the show. The time is now 25 minutes past 3. If you'd like to call in, the number is 0861-555-189. And on the line, all the way from Kampala, Uganda, we have Mr. Michael Bagaina. Michael, you're back.
Hey,
that's much better. We lost you there for a second. Okay, so we were talking about when you were working at the Valor Club in Nairobi. How many years did you stay there before you moved back to Uganda?
Sorry?
I'm saying, how many years were you in Nairobi before you moved back to Uganda?
I was in Nairobi for about a year and a half, and then I moved to Entebbe.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you to Entebbe?
Yeah, I was working with the Pokai Hotel, which I think you're familiar with.
Yes.
And I was there for 3 years.
Mm. And compared to working in Nairobi, where I suppose you were one of the rare chefs because you came from Uganda. What were the working conditions, and also what were the cuisine? How different was the cuisine between the two different places?
Sorry, I didn't hear that properly.
I'm saying, what were the major differences between working in Nairobi and working in Entebbe?
The difference between the cuisine in Nairobi and in Entebbe.
Yeah, and also the working conditions.
I was a bit harder in Nairobi as far as working conditions are concerned.
Yeah.
I wasn't exactly working with my best friend. It was a bit hostile. Especially due to the fact that I was redundant.
Yeah.
So they didn't find, you know, they didn't appreciate that simple fact.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, for me, I just, I took it as an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
And I did learn a lot. So when I moved to Pretoria, you know, I came in as somebody who was a little bit more experienced than sort of my contemporaries there.
Yeah.
Pretoria, because they were still relatively a new hotel, there was a little bit of disorganization. No, which is expected, but it was a good place, and I loved the working conditions there.
Yeah.
I loved my bosses, who also provided me with you know, invaluable experience.
Yeah. Oh dear, we've lost Michael again. Okay, let's have some music and hopefully we can get a better line. Michael, are you back?
All right.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com.
Okay, so the gremlins are getting us. Michael, I believe we got you back on Skype.
Yeah, well, no, yes, this is much better.
That's much better. Now we can clear you properly. Okay, we're going to backtrack a bit. So you moved all back right. to Entebbe, to the Protea Group, and you said that your experience was amazing. What we didn't get across because the line was so bad was that, what were the major differences and challenges between working in Nairobi and working in Entebbe?
Well, like I said, working in Nairobi was a bit more intense.
Yeah.
First of all, I was working in a 75-seater restaurant, but our turnover, especially on busy days, was almost 200-250 covers.
Yeah.
This was, of course, due to the fact that the restaurant was based at a race course. So during the race days, we had a lot of people come through. So, and it was a small workforce.
Right.
You know, five people.
Wow.
So it was more intense, but, you know, experience, as far as experience is concerned, I couldn't ask for a better education.
Yeah.
Now, Protea, you know, a bigger workforce. And not that intense, because like I said, at the time I joined, the hotel was relatively new, so largely unknown, not so busy.
Yeah.
One of the issues, of course, that we faced was because we had a lot of different chefs coming through with different ideas, so there used to be a lot of conflict. But, you know, eventually, you know, all these things were panned out and, you know, there's some semblance of normalcy that was put in place. And unfortunately, I couldn't stay there for any longer than I did because I decided to go back to school.
Brilliant.
Yes. And this was to coincide with me starting my own business.
Right. And what did you study?
Hotel management.
Okay. Yeah. In Uganda?
Yes, in Nkumba University,
mm-hmm.
which is located in Entebbe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for me, it was just more or less, curious. I really wanted to know. I mean, I'd worked in hotels before, but only in production.
Right.
So I was curious. And just because that's my nature, I always want to know what else is going on. So I figured, let me actually study about the entire industry.
Mm.
You never know, it could come in handy.
Yeah.
But my business that I run today, that's called 1311, is geared purely on catering.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of outside catering. We train chefs. We do placement for chefs.
Yeah.
We do consultancy work for different restaurants.
And different restaurants within Uganda, or do you have your branch across East Africa yet?
I've had one client outside Uganda. This is in Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
which is, as far as the industry is concerned, is still in its infancy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's in its infancy with a lot of industries. You know, it's still growing. You know, where
It is. Even here in Uganda, I would say, you know, it's still a developing concept.
Yeah.
Especially where fine dining is concerned.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of eateries where you can go and find your traditional local cuisine.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. What is the, I mean, I know what my favorite local Ugandan cuisine is, but let's enlighten some of our listeners and give us maybe one or two of the most famous traditional Ugandan dishes.
Okay. Well, before I go into that, I'll tell you that, of course, Uganda, like any other place in the world, cuisine is on a regional basis.
Mm.
For example, here in Buganda, you find matoke and what they call wombo, which is a protein, which is steamed in banana leaves. It could be chicken, it could be beef, it could be groundnut sauce, whatever.
Yeah.
It's steamed in banana leaves. And it's a very popular delicacy.
Mm.
Very easy to prepare.
Yeah.
Now, where I come from, which is the southwest of Uganda,
mm.
we, you know, love vegetables and things like pumpkin, And then you have a dish called mpengere, which is a mixture of corn and beans, which, by the way, you'll find across East Africa prepared in different ways, but with the same basic ingredients.
Right.
So those are some of, you know, I'll give you those two examples.
Yeah.
But you have, you know, if you go to different regions of Uganda, you and you have things like Malewa, which, you know, from the eastern part of Uganda, where different things are used for, you know, like cassava, which is quite popular across the country.
Yeah.
But prepared differently.
Yeah.
Some people grind it. Some people prepare the leaves. Some people prepare the stems. So I think it really matters where in Uganda you are.
Yeah. What is your favorite dish? First of all, what was your favorite dish growing up as a child? A traditional dish?
Well, growing up as a child, I was always, for some reason or another, and even today in my adulthood, I'm in love with potatoes.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, anything with potatoes, especially if it's a casserole,
yeah,
I would eat and eat nonstop. And actually, at one time, until I got sick and I had to have I had surgery because my intestines were blocked.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. But how many potato dishes did you eat after that?
trust me, yeah. I used to eat nonstop. I do have a healthy appetite to this day. But yeah, I would say potatoes and chicken.
Yeah.
In any form.
Yeah. And my matoke, I mean, matoke is my favorite dish. And hence, when I came back from Uganda, I put on 10 kilograms because I think I was eating it for breakfast, lunch, and supper. But
I think it's something else that's putting on the cages because matoke is 99% water. So.
Oh, God, thanks for making me feel great. But for somebody who doesn't know what matoke is, will you explain the process of where you get it from, how you prepare it, and what accompaniments you use in whilst eating it?
Okay, so matoke, which is bananas, which is different from plantain. It's just proper green bananas, which are peeled.
Mm-hmm.
And then the process of preparing them is to steam them.
Yeah.
Now, the traditional way is to peel the bananas, wash them thoroughly, and then wrap them in banana fiber or banana leaves, fresh banana leaves, yeah?
Right.
Then insert this in a cooking pot or a saucepan and pour some little water just to fill in the gaps, yeah?
Yeah.
Then cover that, and the best way is to cook it slow over charcoal.
Okay.
Then, you know, it cooks slowly, and at some point it gets really, really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is it's mashed.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
It's mashed into a pulp, which is consistent. Now, the best way to serve this matoke is with groundnut sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Which usually just get groundnuts, roast them, then grind them, and then make a thick sauce out of them.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that just goes down with anything else, I have to say.
I mean, because like the groundnut sauce, usually, you know, you could have your simple groundnut sauce, or you could have groundnut sauce with smoked beef or smoked fish.
Yeah. And tilapia is very, very well known in East Africa. I mean, you can get it in South Africa, but it's not common. There's also another, I don't know if it's a traditional, but also I suppose a Ugandan signature dish is the deep fried tilapia.
Yeah, the whole deep fried fish.
Yes.
Yes, it is quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's traditional, but it's quite popular.
Right.
And incidentally, if you look at menus in different restaurants in and around the country, it's one of the most expensive dishes.
Yeah.
But just generally fish, especially around places with lakes.
Yeah.
Tilapia and Nile perch are very, very popular. Then you have, you know, mudfish, lungfish,
mm-hmm.
Which are also quite popular.
Yeah. Now, moving back to you, and we touched on it earlier, was that fine dining isn't that popular within Uganda and with, I suppose, with certain parts of East Africa. What, where would you place, or how would you best describe African cuisine or fine dining within your region?
Okay, I like to look at it as a movement.
Yeah.
Fine dining is traditionally, if you look at places like Nairobi,
yeah,
they have a very rich culture of fine dining.
Yeah.
In Uganda, it's just beginning to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is because of the period of development and exposure that Ugandans have, you know, have seen.
Mm.
And also because of simple economics. At some point, fine dining was considered to be an expensive venture.
Yeah.
Now, most Ugandans in Kampala, middle class, can afford to go out once or twice a week,
yeah,
to a fancy restaurant. So the idea of fine dining is catching on, especially for those who don't have the time to cook for themselves.
Right.
Also, I think, like I said, because Ugandans have been exposed, you know, they've traveled, they've gone to school abroad, so they've come back and, you know, they still want to continue enjoying the things that they enjoyed while they were out there.
Yeah. Because I suppose the exposure is
every corner.
Yeah, the exposure is much, yeah, is much grander than what it was 10 to 15 years ago.
Yes. Yes. So around the corner now, you have a restaurant, you know, the places where you have restaurants right next to each other.
Yeah.
So the choices are, you know, numerical now. They're almost endless. You know, you could go to a different place every day of the month and experience different cuisine. And I think for us right now, what is left is to improve on the standard of service.
Yeah.
But as far as variety of food is concerned, I think Uganda has come a long way.
Yeah. And I mean, in the beginning, you said that, you know, when you were in the States, a lot of the places that you worked in and studied in the States was that they didn't know certain areas or certain parts of Africa. So they were unknown about, you know, what was happening on the continent. Do you see like a major shift that's happened where the West are trying to, I suppose, copy or duplicate what, you know, in terms of African cuisine within their regions?
Yeah, I mean, right now you have a lot of chefs in the Western world who are dabble in what we'd call African cuisine.
Yeah.
Previously, it was Mediterranean, and I mean, yeah, Morocco and other North African countries.
Mm.
But now you look at some places where, for example, they are plating design. They're going to use the banana leaves I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like canapes or finger foods or whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're going to borrow, you know, from, and this is visually, from other regions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, predominantly, and this is, I'll give Uganda as an example. Predominantly, or the predominant method of cooking is by steaming.
Mm.
Now, when you look across the globe now, you've moved from, which for me still, I believe in, you know, gas ranges, and you cook on a griddle pan or you, you know, and now they started doing a lot more poaching.
Okay.
Okay. So, I mean, this could look like it's a scientific advancement, but I think a lot of people have realized the essence of steaming your food. Mm. As opposed to, you know, grilling it or braising it or what other method of cooking, you know, that is applicable.
Yeah.
So to a certain degree, it's still small. It's a very small thing, but I believe the West is beginning to look this way in terms of inspiration, in terms of new ingredients and new methods of cooking.
That's good. I like that. It's about time that it started to happen. Besides your business and food, have you ever ventured into anything else? Anything with your, I mean, you mentioned that your father was in retail before. Have you ever done any or thought of doing any form of other type of business?
Yeah, well, I mean, I did work for my dad for a little bit in his real estate business. Of course, it wasn't my thing, but as a family, we have an investment group. And under that portfolio, we own a ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in southwest Uganda.
Yeah.
But we're developing for a big cattle.
Okay. And how many kilometers outside of Kampala is that?
It's about 320-something kilometers.
Yeah.
Outside of Kampala.
Yeah.
It's at a place called Ntumdamu.
Mm-hmm.
We've got other holdings as well, some in and around Kampala, where we do produce, vegetables, matoke, onions, carrots, green pepper, coriander. And now we've got another small holding where we're developing a dairy farm.
Right.
So for me, you can imagine this is basically because, you know, I'm at one end of the spectrum. I cook food.
Yeah.
But it has to come from somewhere.
That's true.
You know, so there's an interest on that part as well. You know, what do the farmers do? How do they do this? And so now we're getting into that as a family. I mean, besides also still, you know, being involved in property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And future, where do we see yourself going with the next 5 to 10 years? Okay, we've just lost Michael. We're going to get him back. We're going to quickly play another song and then we'll close off the show.
This is CliffCentral.com. Pan-African Connect on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back, Michael. It seems the gremlins don't want us to be talking today. Just to close off, what are your plans for the next, your projections for the next 5 to 10 years?
It depends. Are you asking on a personal level?
We won't go too personal now. let's keep it to your business.
Ideally, there's two things that I'm looking at doing.
Yeah.
One is I want to create a center of excellence.
Yeah.
For chefs.
Mm-hmm.
I want to create a platform where chefs can come and exchange ideas and encourage others to get into this business.
Yeah.
Offer some sort of education. We'd provide, you know, excellent tutoring and training and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The other one is I want to establish a fine dining chain. But not only in Uganda. My ambition is to go regional in East Africa.
Yeah.
And, you know, perhaps beyond. In the next 5 to 10 years, I should be able to have a kid both.
I see it happening. I see it happening because I think you're coming in at the right time because I don't have to tell you this, but there's a lot of interest and a lot of investment that's coming into East Africa. And with that, it's bringing new trends and you know, other attractive possibilities. So I definitely see it happening. You also have a very strong passion for children and education. What organizations do you support?
Yes, I do. There's an orphanage in Entebbe called Malaika.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved with them. I used to coach the girls' rugby team.
Mm-hmm.
But I moved away from the coaching responsibilities and I'm now president of the club.
Oh, wow.
It's a recognized club that is actively involved in women's rugby in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
Very brilliant bunch of young ladies who unfortunately, you know, left their parents and I believe if it wasn't for this house that they're in, they'd be lost.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is something that's important for them and rugby has also given them something to do, something to look forward to. So
yeah.
I do spend a lot of my time with these young ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. And what bit of advice could you give to the youth who's out there who are, firstly, have a passion for something and they don't know how to pursue it? What words of advice would you be able to give them?
I'll tell you, whatever it is, whether you want to be a chef or whether you want to be a pilot or whatever it is that you want to be in life, if you figure it out and and you know that's what you want to do, and you know that's where you belong, then never stop doing it.
Yeah.
Go after your dream. So it's always going to be difficult. There will always be obstacles, but I believe anything can be achieved.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's insurmountable.
Mm.
So if you believe in yourself, then, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah. And something we didn't touch on earlier on, what the political situation in Uganda. I mean, you're going through some serious elections at the moment. Do you see it a positive outcome happening? That's had. What is the word on the ground?
As expected, there's skirmishes and little bits of violence here and there.
Mm.
But all in all, I think it's going to be a successful election.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Uganda is still a young democracy, so we still have a lot of way to go before we mature politically. So, these are early days. You know what they say, when you're giving birth, it's always painful.
Yeah.
And I think Uganda is still giving birth to political child. But I believe everything is going to be okay over the next week or so.
Yeah.
Before we know who our duly elected president is.
Yeah. Well, we wish you the best of luck, and we will continue to watch your endeavors and see your businesses grow and stay in contact with us. Let us know what's been happening, and thank you so much for your time and all the efforts that you're putting into the culinary part of the industry of Uganda.
All right, thank you very much for hosting me. It's been a real pleasure, and I definitely will be in touch.
Okay, have a beautiful day.
Yeah.
That was Chef Michael Bagaina, all the way from Uganda, talking about his culinary journey from studying overseas, working in Kenya and so forth. If you want to download the podcast, it will be up within the next hour. Thank you so much for listening. It's now 5 to 4. Please tune in next week as we go Pan-African and we look at South African and Ghanaian female filmmakers and what they're doing and how they're making their mark on the continent. Of course, if you want to give any bit of advice or you have any comments, my email address is rosie@rosiemutena.biz. Otherwise, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. Speak to you next week.
Pan-African Connect on cliffcentral.com. This is cliffcentral.com.